Okay, everybody. So, more about A. So, again, just to remind you, so A was chord diagrams modulo the four-term relation, and it's a graded space. And it's not a waste of time to study it. It's completely combinatorics, but it's not a waste of time, right? Because it is sort of like the space of knots, in the sense that in some double duality sense. And more precisely, there is, well, we haven't quite talked about it, but about how to prove the fundamental theorem, but the fundamental theorem will end up being proven. We have not yet proven it, right? Will end up being proven by finding an invariant Z going from here to here. And so this is the target space of a very rich invariant. Okay? Anyway, we nearly proved the following theorem last time. So the theorem said that A, along with the multiplications that we mentioned, with the co-multiplications that we mentioned, and two objects that I said were minor, namely the unit and the co-unit, makes a connected, graded, commutative, co-commutative bi-algebra, and I believe I've defined all of these things. And maybe an additional property is that the dimension of AM for every fixed M is less than infinity. A itself is infinite dimensional, but at every given degree, it's a finite dimension. So the only thing missing, well, okay, the big thing missing is what is it good for, but the small thing missing is the two remaining objects, the unit and the co-unit. Okay, so let me just say what they are. So a unit, sorry, I don't know why I wrote co-unit. So a unit is something that you have in an algebra. If you have an algebra, then a unit is an element one inside the algebra such that 1 times A is equal to A times 1 is equal to A for every A inside the algebra. But I don't want to write it this way. Just like I wanted to write M as a map, and so that I would be able to write commutative diagrams and then dualize them, I want to write having a unit as a map. Okay? So alternatively, a unit is a map, eta, from the ground field. From now on, let me think of the ground field as if it is the rational numbers. I could work with other ground fields as well. Into the... Sorry. Technical malfunction. Oh, good, it came back. Sorry, that's the problem with gadgets. Sometimes they don't work. So it's a map eta from the ground field into the algebra, which, you know, you should think of it. So in your mind, you should think of it as the map which maps a coefficient alpha into alpha times 1. Okay? And it has the property that a unit has. So let me write this property as a diagram. Yes, Leonard?
So the camera is tilted, so the board is kind of some...
Oh, sorry, I forgot to switch to the other camera. It's not that the camera is tilted, it's that it's the wrong camera. Sorry about that. Okay, but I am sharing the screen, so you could still see it on... Okay, so the property is the following. If you have an element okay, you can go from Q tensor A into A in two different ways. One way is, well, if you tensor with the ground field, they're isomorphic, so these two are the same. So there's clearly a map from Q tensor A. This is the map that does nothing. Alternatively, you could apply the unit tensor the identity. So now you are in, so this is the identity map. So now you are in A tensor A. And then you could apply the multiplication. Okay? So think about it like this. So if you had here elements alpha tensor A, an element alpha tensor A, then the map, the isomorphism would map it to alpha A here, and the unit tensor the identity would map it to alpha 1 tensor A here, and then the multiplication map will map it into alpha 1 times A, but 1 is the identity, so these two are equal. So the properties that the unit should satisfy is that this diagram commutes, and if the algebra is commutative, that's enough. If it's not commutative, but and ours are commutative, so I'll ignore the other case. But if the algebra is just associative and not necessarily commutative, there is also a symmetric map where you swap the role of A and Q. Just swap it over. Okay? So anyway, that's what it means to be a unit. Now, what does it mean to be... Okay, so there is also the dual notion. So a co-unit is sort of everything reversed. So it's a map epsilon from the algebra into the ground field such that the opposite diagram is commutative. So the opposite diagram is the following. If you have, there are two ways to go from A to Q tensor A. One way is, well, A and Q tensor A are isomorphic, like before. The other way is you first apply the co-product. So this is, I should have said, this is a co-unit in a co-algebra. Okay? So you first apply the co-product, and then you are in A tensor A, and then you get from A tensor A to Q tensor A by applying epsilon tensor the identity. And again, if the co-algebra is co-commutative, then that's the only axiom. I mean, the axiom is that this diagram commutes. And if the algebra is not necessarily co-commutative, you also have the axiom in which you flip the order of Q and A. Okay? So the claim that I didn't quite completely say is that our space of chord diagrams has a unit and a co-unit as well. So, but it's actually nearly trivial. I mean, most of the time is defining the notion. Actually, proving it is trivial. So in our A, the map eta from the ground field into A is the map which maps a constant alpha, a coefficient alpha, to alpha times the unit diagram, What is the unit diagram? It's the diagram that if you multiply it into any other diagram, the other diagram doesn't change. But that's clearly the empty diagram. So this is not zero. This is the empty diagram. That's a circle, not zero. Okay? Circle, not zero. Okay? And the map epsilon, so, well, you know, if you want to think where epsilon comes from, then you have to think, so we have to, so a co-unit should correspond to the unit of the dual. So we should be thinking which knot invariant, when you multiply it with all other knot invariants, does not change them. The answer is, it's the knot invariant which has the constant value 1. So now, what is the weight system of the knot invariant whose constant value is 1? So this is it will be a degree 0 invariant, right? The constant is a degree 0 invariant, and it has and therefore its weight system will be a functional on chord diagram with 0 chords, and there is only 1 chord diagram on 0 chords. It's the empty circle, and it should be the functional that maps this diagram to 1. So epsilon is defined by epsilon of a diagram D is equal to 1, sorry, not I, 1, if D is equal to a circle, again, this is a circle, not the number 0, and 0 if D is anything else, and maybe I'll make it clearer by writing if the degree of D is greater than 1. Okay? So, after having said all of this, the theorem is actually trivial. So, after making the definition, you just have to verify the properties, and it's completely trivial. But still, it was important to say it, because then comes another theorem that I will not prove, but that's a classical theorem. So this is the Milnor-Moore theorem, and it's from, I'm forgetting when, but from the 60s. And I'll do a reduced version. So this is the commutative version, and there is a more general version as well, which I will not discuss. Okay, but anyway, or maybe I will discuss, but not now. But anyway, this theorem says that if A is a handful of words, so exactly all the words that we said before. So, should I repeat it? So, graded, connected, commutative, co-commutative, associative, co-associative, and has, and all the dimensions are finite. So, if A is essentially as above, then A is a graded polynomial algebra. And I think I want to be a little bit more precise about this, but first I want to tell you about a little bit about graded polynomial algebras. So, you know, you all know polynomials, right? So, so if you have a a list of variables. Let's call them P1, P2, P3, and so on. And in fact, it may even be infinitely many. Okay? You can look at the polynomials in all of these variables. To make it a graded polynomial algebra, I will insist that each variable pi also has a degree, and the degree of all of these pi's are greater than or equal to 1. So, for example, you could be talking about the ring of polynomials in two variables x, y, but then if you decree that the degree of x is equal to 1 and the degree of y is equal to 2, then you will be counting degrees in a different way. So the degree of x, y squared will be 1 plus 2 times 2, so 1 plus 4, so it will be 5. So it makes sense to talk about graded polynomial algebras. Okay? And a graded polynomial algebra, or in fact, every polynomial algebra, is in fact a bi-algebra as well. So I need to tell you how to compute the coproduct of an element. Right? The product you all know. But I need to tell you how to compute the coproduct as well. So we decree that the coproduct of pi, of every element pi, is 1 tensor pi plus pi tensor 1. And then if you have a more complicated element, the coproduct is forced on you. So for example, if you want to know what is the coproduct of x, y squared, so one property of the coproduct was that it was compatible with the product. So the coproduct is a, it's compatible with the product, and the compatibility simply means that this is the coproduct of x times the coproduct of y quantity squared, and this is x tensor 1 plus 1 tensor x times y tensor 1 plus 1 tensor y squared. And now if you have the energy, you can open the parentheses and write it explicitly. So the only reason I'm mentioning it is to mention that setting this rule is enough. I mean, from this you know all the other properties. There is also a unit. So the unit, as you can imagine, maps every scalar to that scalar times 1 in the polynomial ring. And there is also a co-unit, epsilon. And again, I'm not defining them, but the co-unit will simply map every polynomial to the constant term, so to the term of degree 0 in it. Okay? And the claim is that our algebra is of that type. Namely, you can find a list of generators with the further properties that only finitely many of them have a degree less than n for any n. So there will be infinitely many generators, but only finitely many in each degree, such that our A is that. And in fact, I can make it even a bit more refined. Okay? So in fact, this construction of the polynomial ring can be slightly generalized, or in fact, it's barely generalized. So namely, there is the following construction. So if V is, let's call it P. Sorry. V is what we called it before, let's call it P. So if P, uppercase P, is a graded vector space, you can form the symmetric algebra of P. So what is the symmetric algebra of P? The symmetric algebra of P is, well, the so-called tensor algebra of P. So it's the, but rather than defining it, let me just tell you what it is. So it's just the space generated by, well, it's actually the sum of all tensor powers of P. But the sum of all tensor, what it really means is that an element is something of the form P1 tensor, P2 tensor, up to tensor Pn, where all of the PIs are in P. These PIs are not the same as the PIs from here. Okay? And modulo the relation, so this is the tensor algebra, modulo the relation that you force it to be symmetric. So modulo the relation that P1 tensor up to Pn is equal to P sigma 1 up to tensor up to P sigma n for every permutation of n elements. Okay? So this is an algebra by concatenation. So if you have two products of P's, two long tensor products of P's, you can concatenate them. It's a coalgebra by the rule that decrees that the same rule as before. So if lower case p belongs to upper case p, you decree that the coproduct of lower case p is p tensor 1 plus 1 tensor p. And if uppercase P is the vector space freely generated, so it's the vector space generated by the generators of a polynomial ring, then the symmetric algebra on that vector space is the polynomial ring. Okay? So, if you... let me write it as a formula. So the symmetric algebra of the vector space generated by some list P1 up to Pn and maybe even continued of generators is equal to the polynomial ring on these generators. Having said this, so I can continue the statement of the Milner-Moore theorem. So Milner-Moore will say that A is isomorphic as a bialgebra, so as a bialgebra, meaning both in terms of the product and the coproduct, to the symmetric algebra generated by the primitives of A. Now, what are the primitives of A? These are the generators. These are like the generators of the polynomial algebra. So the primitives of A are the collection of all P inside A such that the coproduct applied to P is equal to P tensor 1 plus 1 tensor P. Why do I care? Maybe I said too much, because because I really wanted to say something else today. But anyway, why do I care? It means that when you compute, like I did, oops, sorry, what happened here? Sorry, I've upgraded the software and since then it's misbehaving. So, when you compute the dimension of AM and you get 1, 1, 2, 3, 6, 10, 19, 13, 60 and so on, you could instead compute the dimensions of the spaces of primitives and they are much smaller. These are the number of generators there are in each degree. So there are 0, 1, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 12, and so on. Okay? You know, if you want to see what it means, it will really mean that there are... So, you know, let's try to interpret this 6 and this 2 here. Okay? So, the 6 and the 2 here means, the 6 means that there are 6 finite type invariants of degree 4. The 2 means that only 2 of them are primitive, only 2 of them are new, and all the other ones are actually products of the of invariants that come from lower degrees. Right? If you want to compute if you want to figure out the dimension of a polynomial algebra in degree n, then there are the primitives, the generators in degree n, and the ones that are products of things of lower degree. So, in degree 4, there will be 6 invariants, but only 2 of them are new, and the remaining 4 will be the one of degree 1 to the 4th. So, you know, let me write it schematically. So, if you want to know what these 6 are, then there is the degree 1 raised to the power 4, multiplied by itself 4 times. There will be the degree 1 multiplied by itself twice times the degree 2. There will be the degree 2-1 times the degree 2-1. And then there will be the degree 3-1 times the degree 1-1. And there should be another one. Oh no, these are 4 plus the 2 primitives 1 gives us the 6. Okay? Good.
So you define a primitive as something, or as an element which behaves a certain way under the co-multiplication.
Yes.
Is it possible to reword this as like the set of irreducible elements, or the set of elements that cannot be written as a product of two non-invertible elements, or are those like slightly different notions?
There are slightly different notions. So, consider, for example, the algebra we talked about before, Q of X and Y, where the degree of X is equal to 1 and the degree of Y is equal to 2. And let's look at the degree 2 elements of this algebra. Okay? So, they include, you know what, they include y plus 0.01 times x squared. Okay? This one is not primitive, but it also, sorry, but this one cannot be written as a, but it's irreducible, right? It cannot be written as a product. Okay? the primitives will be only x and y, but there are many other things that cannot be written as a product. Okay? Okay. Okay.
Is there a way to characterize the primitives in terms of chord diagrams of the primitives?
Yes, and that will be the next topic.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Or it will be embedded inside the next topic. Okay? So, the next thing I wanted to say is... So A, the algebra of chord diagrams, is therefore, it's worth your while that I'll give you a list of primitives. Okay? So, in degree one, there is only one primitive, and it's the chord diagram with one chord, and it's, well, also sometimes known as the tetragraph. Okay? In degree two, there is also only one primitive, and it's the difference between this diagram and that diagram. And beyond that, I haven't memorized. But the reason I wanted to mention it is to say that A reduced was really A modded out by the ideal generated by this diagram. Right? Because I need to mod out by the framing independence relation, and the framing independence relation means, you know, if you have a chord diagram with an isolated chord, you set it to zero, but a chord diagram with an isolated chord is a multiple of theta. Okay? But this means that there are natural maps from A to A reduced. That's obvious. That's just the projection. Okay? But there is also a natural map going from A reduced to A. This is less obvious. This is the fact that if you have a polynomial ring, modding out by one of the generators simply gives you a polynomial ring with one generator less. And if you have a polynomial ring with one generator less, so in other words, A reduced is the... really what I'm telling you here is that A reduced is the polynomial ring generated by... The generators of A with one generator removed. So there is clearly a map from A reduced to A. You simply, if you have a polynomial, polynomial rings in fewer variables always map into polynomial rings in more variables. Okay, and. This is actually not a trivial map, and I think it will be the content of homework 6, maybe. So you'll see it again. Okay. So that's the end of this topic. It took me longer than I expected, and I want to talk about something else now. Okay. So I want to tell you that A is also dual in some sense. So we already know that it's dual to knots. I want to tell you that it's also dual in some sense to Lie algebras and representations. Okay? So, there is a pairing which maps A tensored, and this is completely informal, so Lie algebras and representations into the ground field. Okay? So this is completely informal. The way I wrote it, it's complete nonsense, but I'll make it formal a little bit later. Or now. Okay? And that's why for every Lie algebra and every representation there is a not invariant, because the moment you have such a pairing, it means that whenever you have a Lie algebra and a representation, you have a functional on A, and a functional on A is a functional on knots. Okay? So it's a valuable piece of information. But first I have to prove a theorem which tells you somehow that A looks like a Lie algebra. Okay? And so let me state the theorem and then explain why it means what I just said. Okay? So the theorem says that the following. The theorem says that A is isomorphic to a different space, which I will call A up T, and T stands for trivalent, so T stands for trivalent, but also for temporary, because the moment I will prove that the two spaces are isomorphic, I will no longer distinguish between them, and then I'll drop the T. And what is AT? So I suppose I have to define it. So AT is likewise, like A, it's a space of diagrams, but it's a different space of diagrams. So the diagrams in AT, oh sorry, I ran out of paper. So the diagrams in AT, like the diagrams in A, have a skeleton, which is a circle, and then they might have a number of chords, but in addition to the chords, they may have trivalent vertices. So there might be more, I mean, basically there are trivalent graphs. There might be a complicated structure of trivalent vertices. I don't know, there could be another piece here like this. Okay? But I have to tell you a little bit, with a little bit more information. So, first of all, this point here, you see this is a quadrivalent vertex. That's not a vertex. Right? It's just because I projected the diagram to the plane, it looked like a vertex, but it's not a vertex. Vertices are only trivalent. Second, so in a trivalent vertex, there are always three edges coming out. Okay? I mean, in this case, the three edges are, two of them are the same, but there are still three edges coming out near each vertex. I want you to specify a cyclic ordering of these vertices in each, sorry, of these edges in each vertex. So at each vertex you specify either this cyclic ordering or the opposite cyclic ordering. Okay? So this is a bit of further information, and this information is called, so the vertices are oriented. Okay? Now, my convention is to draw these diagrams in the plane. I mean, these diagrams are a priori not planars. There is nothing planar about them, but, you know, I draw them in the plane, and my convention will be to draw them in the plane such that the vertices are always oriented counterclockwise unless otherwise specified. Okay? So this vertex was not specified, so the orientation is counterclockwise. Okay? And there is one there are two further things. One is the diagram must be connected. So I should have said it. So it should be connected. And the one last property that I want to say is this is a graded space, and I need to tell you how to compute the degree. So the degree of a diagram is half the total number of vertices, half the total number of vertices. So, for example, this diagram has, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 degrees on vertices on the circle, and another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 vertices inside. 9 plus 5 is 14, divided by 2. So this diagram is of degree 7. Okay? So now I told you what are the diagrams, and I still have to tell you what are the relations. The relations are also new. So there are three relations. The first relation is the anti-symmetry relation, which says that an internal vertex is anti-symmetric. So if you flip the orientation of an internal vertex, you flip a sign. So let me write it using my conventions. So basically, if you have an internal vertex and you replace it by the vertex with opposite orientation, but my convention is that when I draw vertices in the plane, they're always oriented counterclockwise. So to draw the one with the opposite orientation, I just draw it this way. Okay? So this plus this is equal to zero. Then there is the STU relation. So the STU relation says that if you have the following picture, so if you have, I should have said that the circle is oriented. So if you have three diagrams like this, so one is has an internal vertex which is leaning on the circle outside. Okay? Then you can replace it by this minus that. Notice that those three diagrams have the same degree. Okay? Because all of them have two vertices. And then the last relation is the so-called IHX relation. So the IHX relation looks like the letter I is equal to the letter H. So this is all happening inside the diagram. Minus the letter X, but the letter X doesn't have a vertex, so I actually insert another edge here, so now it has two vertices. Okay? So, maybe before proving this theorem, do people here know what Lie algebras are? Okay. So, you know what, let me do a brief aside on Lie algebras. So, a Lie algebra, you know what, I'll make it an even fancier aside later on, but for now it will be brief. So, what's a Lie algebra? A Lie algebra is a vector space L along with a bracket, so a map from L, a map called the bracket from L tensor L into L. And you should be thinking of it, so the simplest example is if you're talking about matrices, and then A bracket B is AB minus BA. And the bracket has two properties. So it must have two properties. So first of all, the bracket of is anti-symmetric, so the bracket of A and B is equal to the negative of the bracket of B and A. And the second property is that the bracket should satisfy the so-called Jacobi identity. So A bracket B bracket C is equal to, sorry, not equal to, plus the three cyclic permutations. So B bracket C bracket A plus C bracket A bracket B. So this funny combination is equal to zero, and this is the so-called Jacobi identity. And this is just called anti-symmetry. Anyway, I claim, and I'll end with that, that the theorem before, so A up T screams out, I'm a Lie algebra, or I'm related to Lie algebras. So why? So I will interpret an internal vertex, so the dictionary is, so the dictionary between these two things is that an internal vertex corresponds to a bracket, and walking along the blue line corresponds to matrix multiplication. So walking along the blue line corresponds to matrix multiplication. And now this relation becomes the bracket is anti-symmetric. This relation becomes the bracket corresponds to multiplying A by B and then B by A. So put a little A here and B here. And the first, this relation becomes the bracket of AB is equal to A times B times B times A. Sorry, minus B times A. And finally, if you read this relation carefully, well, this is a relation which says that something that involves two brackets written in three different ways adds to zero. And this is exactly the Jacobi identity. Okay? So this was totally informal. Sorry, the definition of A transpose is formal. The definition of a Lie algebra is formal. The relationship between them is totally informal, and hence I will have to do it later. But the point is, but what I wanted to say is that, well, I wanted to motivate. So next time we will have to prove the theorem and turn this kind of very, very schematic relationship into something formal. And we actually have an extra minute, but there's nothing natural to say in that minute, so I'll stop. I mean, we haven't run out of things to say, it's just, yeah.
Could you explain what a connected diagram means again?
Just connected means no, okay, so what's connected, so, okay. Maybe I'll explain what's not connected. So, you see, the moment I've allowed green vertices, a diagram could have a connected component that doesn't touch anything else. Right? Here is a diagram which is a trivalent graph. Okay? But one component does not touch anything else. So connected just means you can walk along the edges from anywhere to anywhere else.
Yeah, I was saying the way we just currently interpret chord diagrams is coming naturally from singular knots.
Yeah.
What do trivalent diagrams naturally come out of?
Ooh, that's a terrific question. The answer is that, for us it will be a formal construction. Namely, you know, I will prove this theorem, and then you cannot argue with me, because the moment I prove it, it's true. Okay? The real answer to your question, the better answer to your question, is that knots live in space, and finite type invariants are about modifying knots. Okay, so, you know, you take a knot, and you make small modifications in a neighborhood of a point. Okay?
Yeah.
And these are sort of the chords. The chords really correspond to places on the knot where you've done modification. If you are looking at trivalent vertices, then they correspond to modifications you make to space itself. So to make sense of it, you have to extend the theory to a theory of knots inside three manifolds. Instead of inside R3, you make it knots inside three manifolds. And then inside the three manifold, you can make various little minor inside modifications which, you know, well, do not correspond to flipping crossings. They're different, but they're in spirit like flipping crossings. They're called surgeries, and I'm imprecise because it's roughly surgeries. And then the internal vertices correspond to making modifications to the manifold. Okay?
I see.
I doubt we will end up talking about it. There is a lot to say, but I doubt we will get there because I want to flow in different directions. So for us, it will remain a formality. But a very easy one, by the way. I mean, I said a lot about it, but at the end, it's actually very easy.
Okay. To perform surgery, you need a whole knot, right? So this is some local version of this?
Sorry, say it again?
To perform surgery, you need to drill along the whole knot, right? So is there some local version of this that's happening in the analogy here?
Not really. I mean, I have to tell you what are the knots. So a vertex like this corresponds to doing a surgery on a knot that you're going to draw along these edges and vertices.
Ah, okay. So the vertex describes a knot along which you have to perform surgery.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
If you want to learn more about it, Google claspers and Habiro.
Okay.
So Habiro is the person who did it, and the work is about claspers. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So let's quit and see you on Monday.